Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, we're talking with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Thanks so much for being with us. Remember, you can email your questions for Mayor Barton or any of our program's mayors to ask@wbaa.org. And we have the mayor on the line right now. Welcome to the show, Mayor Barton.
Good afternoon, Emily.
The governor yesterday announced Indiana will remain in stage 4.5. I believe we've been there now since the beginning of July. And the statewide mask mandate will be extended for another month. And last month you said, and as always, we're going to note that these assessments can be subjective. You thought you were seeing about 60% masking compliance in Crawfordsville. Do you think that's improved since the last time we spoke?
I do think it's improved and kind of what we expected. You know, you have to get people time to adjust to that. And I think, you know, give them time to see their friends and neighbors doing it, and family members doing it. So, you know, when you come out and say this is mandatory, do it today, that takes a little while. And we're seeing those numbers go up for sure. There's no doubt about that.
I know you mentioned a conversation you had with a gentleman who seemed confused about the back and forth and what he needed to be doing. Do you feel like you're continuing to have those conversations, or does the reasoning seem more clear to people overall?
I think people are still confused. And, you know, just recently in the last day or so, the CDC has come out with some new guidance. And I think the state has come out with some new guidance. So once again, you know, people are confused. And even, you know, our health officials, we had a meeting this morning and we heard from the county health officer and folks from the health department. And they said, look, you know, this is new guidance and we need some time to digest it and wrap our own heads around this before we can talk too much about it publicly. So there's still some confusion out there. There's no doubt about that.
So to the extent that they don't, that they're still digesting it, I guess what was the, because this is new guidance from the CDC. What direction do you think they might go in? Because it will change possibly how much people are tested.
Right. Well, I think it's going to come down to, you know, really what the state of Indiana does with that CDC guidance. And I think that's what the locals are waiting to see, because obviously the testing capacity and the numbers are different, you know, throughout the country. And you kind of have to tailor that to what's happening locally. So I know they're waiting on some guidance, more clear guidance from based on that from the state. But you know, again, at the end of the day, there's only so much testing capacity unless they do something to improve that. So we'll just have to see how it plays out.
Yesterday, the state also announced they're implementing a color coding system for counties related to several COVID metrics. The state says the goal is to provide a system that local and school officials can use to understand the level of community spread and how it's changing on the county level so they can make decisions. Schools have asked for guidance based on the metrics. And those metrics are new cases per 100,000 residents, percent positivity, and change in percent positivity. And so your color can range from blue, which is the best color with the lowest score, all the way up to red. And the thought is that this system, which will be updated weekly, will help with the COVID-related decision-making process within these counties. You know, to the extent that you've had a chance to take a look at this, do you think that this will be a useful tool, both for people who are looking to gauge what's happening in their area, just a resident, and for people like you or county officials who have to make decisions based on data?
You know, the more information we have, the better. So, you know, it's kind of information we already had. They're just kind of boiling it down and making it more concise. You know, and again, that's only as good as the ability of locals to make decisions. You know, you can classify this by county and by community, but if they're not going to give the locals the ability to adjust based on that, then I don't know, you know, that really accomplishes much. But, you know, it's not new metrics, not new data. We've had access to this for a while. They're just putting it in one easy to access format.
So I'm seeing it's saying scoring does not trigger a state requirement of any action, but provides local information and recommendations. Do you think, you know, we're talking about people who are confused and who might need a better way of assessing what's going on. Could this be helpful for them, for you to be able to point to this and say, this is our color, this is where we're at,
sure,
instead of having to boil it down and get into the into the numbers?
Yeah, you know, like I said, the more information we have available and the more information we can provide the public, the better. You know, and this probably is very helpful for the schools. I don't doubt that a bit. They're trying to really adjust on the fly, look at a lot of different data, a lot of different things going on. So the more you can provide for them as they're attempting to do that, the better you are. So, you know, it's a good step, and I think in the right direction. But again, we have to be careful because a lot of times people feel like the metrics or the measurement or the end goal is being changed on them. And I think that's where we're kind of struggling with the public on that. I'll just tell you, the pushback that we are getting continues to increase week after week. And you're going to have to provide good, solid, measurable data to combat that. You really are. But you're going to have to be really careful that it does not appear that you're moving and changing the goal and moving and changing the measurements that you're using to get there.
Can you talk about what people are pushing back against specifically?
Just a feeling that they're confused about the end goal here. You know, we went into this with a very clear goal of flattening the curve. We're not going to prevent, you know, the spread of this totally within our country. You know, we just have to make sure we don't overwhelm the healthcare system. But people now are not hearing that. They're hearing, you know, that basically we're just trying to stomp this out. So people feel like the goal has been changed there. And of course, as we've talked about many times, and you've talked, I'm sure, with the other mayors, the mask mandate is controversial. There's no doubt about that. You know, so you just have to provide people with good, solid data and information. And as I've said over and over, you know, the health department, I think, is really up against a struggle there because for every bit of positive factual information they put out, there's probably 20 or 30 articles on social media that contradict that. So, you know, that information is very important, but it's very hard to manage today.
And certainly part of the conversation that's continuing to happen and has happened all along is that we don't have a vaccine for this, though certainly there are lots of developments in that direction. And we are heading into flu season also. I think something that has been the case all along is that scientists and doctors and officials are reacting to information almost in real time as new information comes in. And so certainly everyone kind of simultaneously taking it in and having to reassess what's happening. I know that I'm looking at your actual Montgomery County numbers for today, your 7-day positivity rate right now is 2.8%. You've got 393 cases, 21 deaths. And so your percentages are looking lower maybe than they were in the past. So things seem to be improving in your area.
Right. And we had an update today from the county health officer, Dr. Douglas. And you know, the reality in our local numbers is that, you know, if you look nationally, Indiana is kind of in the middle of the pack. And then if you look, you know, Montgomery County, our numbers are considerably lower than the state average. So we've done well here. We do have some concerns. You know, the local hospital reported in that they've had several admissions in the last few days, and that causes us to pay attention and perk our ears up.
Yeah.
And they did note that they had their first hospital admission for influenza A of the season. So, you know, we've been bracing for that influenza to start, and it's early for that right now. But they did see their first one and have their first admission for that. So our data here is really, really good. But on the other hand, there are some things out there that cause us to be cautious.
And I know that the governor said yesterday that, you know, our numbers are trending down. He wants to keep it that way, which I think is part of why the mask mandate has been extended. So that, you know, what happens if we just take it away? Do numbers go back up? You know, is it simpler to just leave things as they are, leave the status quo intact for a little while longer, especially given that we've just reopened all of these schools? We've kind of created a lot more variables than maybe existed over the summer when people might have had a little bit more control about how many people they were exposed to on a given day.
Yeah, and you know, the data is very telling, and we hear this all the time. You know, the where you're seeing this spread is in family clusters. That's it. That's the bottom line. It's not in the grocery store. It's not in the, you know, those kinds of places. This family clusters is where you're seeing this spread, and that obviously spills over into schools. So, you know, the contact tracing continues to be really, really important. I think the schools are doing a fantastic job with that, from what I hear. I'm not sure that what the state's doing is near as robust as what was being done on the local level before the state took it over. But that's the key, you know, really identifying these clusters and understanding that, you know, this is where spread happens. You know, we saw our numbers continually go down, and then we had the July 4th holiday. We saw the numbers start to creep back up. Mm-hmm. You know, now we're getting in the situation. I said it was going to be interesting to see what happened after race day, because so many groups and people got together. You know, the blackout was lifted locally. They were having these race parties. Everybody come over and watch it on TV. It'd be interesting to see, you know, in a couple of weeks, if there's any effect from that. But you also have Labor Day holiday coming up as well. So there's some factors there that you have to think about.
You're listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. We're talking with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. So K through 12 schools have reopened in Crawfordsville. Something I don't think you and I have talked about, though, is Wabash. You know, here in Greater Lafayette, obviously we have Purdue University. Across the country, communities of all sizes are grappling with the possible impacts on COVID numbers when college students come back to school. You know, obviously Wabash has worked with the county health department, but how have you been involved in discussions about students coming back and just more generally what that could mean for residents?
Well, we've been very engaged with Wabash in that discussion for months now, and the students are back. And, you know, the situation here is vastly different than you would have like with Purdue, because mm-hmm. you're talking about less than 1,000 students. So, you right. know, the impact isn't as severe, and we're not as densely populated as a West Lafayette. So people are spread out a little bit more. But Wabash has done a really nice job of thinking this through and creating a really robust system there to make sure that they keep this in check. And, you know, one of the first things that's different this year is that students are being, I don't want to say they're being held to campus, but that interaction between the community and the campus has been reduced drastically. You know, and it's strange because we've spent years trying to increase that interaction, right? Because it wasn't what it needed to be. But for a semester or so, we're going to pull back and we're going to create that invisible barrier. So people from the community are not really being invited to campus. Obviously, students have to travel into the community to go shopping and things like that. But we're really limiting that interaction between the community and the college. So that's the first thing. And then, you know, they tested all the students before they arrived. I know they had to send some students home because there were some positives. And now they have a system in place. We heard a report this morning where they're doing surveillance monitoring. They're randomly picking a number of students, and they've picked up some activity there. And they're doing a nice job of going in and figuring out where that's at and kind of stomping it out, if you will, stopping it where it's at and sending people home, quarantining people, things like that. So Wabash has really been on top of it. I'm not really concerned about Wabash being an impact on our community as far as the spread of this, because the interaction is really minimal for the most part. The one impact we will see is, you know, as Wabash does testing and they have positives, those numbers will be reflected in the Montgomery County data. So yes. we expect probably in the next week or so, we will see an uptick in our local numbers because of the testing that's being done at Wabash.
How has the K through 12 reopening process gone in Crawfordsville?
Well, I think it's gone well. You know, we've not had a lot of direct conversation with the superintendents. I mean, through our briefings, we've had a little bit, but it seems to have gone well. Everybody's adjusting and you know, kind of taking it in stride. I know parents are stressed, to say the least. It's different, and there's some unknowns there, but, you know, I know Crawfordsville Schools, they've talked about really setting some goals to get everybody back in school, and they're running a hybrid schedule right now and really trying to set goals to get away from that, you know, in the coming weeks or months. So from what I can tell, it's going well. But, you know, again, the criteria for when a student is sent home is changing. And that's probably been the biggest confusing factor. You know, you have students who, you know, for whatever reason, met the criteria, and they get sent home for a couple of weeks. That's been stressful in families and stressful in the community. But, you know, they're doing the best they can and they're adjusting. And I applaud the teachers. It has to be extremely difficult to try to teach and accomplish education while dealing with this.
So I read that downtown Crawfordsville will be featuring wayfinding signs. So first, can you explain what a wayfinding sign does?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, it's the system trying to create a uniform system of signage in your community to direct people to what you have to offer. And we have a lot to offer in this community, but it's really kind of confusing about how you get there, where it's at, where can you park, those kinds of things. And for example, Lafayette, West Lafayette has a great system of wayfinding signage. And the company we're using is actually the same company that designed there. So, you know, how do you get to the museums if you're a visitor to this community? Even people who live here, where's the free parking downtown? Where can I park? How long can I park? Right now, it's a hodgepodge of signage, and we're going to clean that up and have one uniform system so you know what you're looking at.
So I read Crawfordsville Main Street program manager Sue Lucas quoted as saying, wayfinding will really help with recovery. You know, we've talked before on the program pre-COVID-19 about how to attract people to Crawfordsville and all the ways that can be done. So how is that task harder right now?
Well, people aren't out as much. You know, I mean, the travel is down and tourism is down and all those things, and people are being careful. But, you know, again, you just have to look at the changing landscape. You know, retail has a whole set of new problems to deal with. And we just have to help them adjust. But the wayfinding, I think, will take our community to the next level. It really will, because we have everything in place. We just don't do a good job of showcasing it and telling people about it and helping people find things when they're in our community. And if you've been to Crawfordsville, we have a lot of one-way streets. And that's a topic of conversation, but it's very confusing and intimidating for the outside person coming to our community. So we need to clean all that up and make this a very welcoming place so that people want to come here and shop and dine and go to the museums and so on.
I know we've talked repeatedly about how local businesses have been impacted by residents not visiting them. So would you say there's been an impact possibly even greater from fewer people visiting from out of town?
Well, there's been a shift for sure. Now, you know, I mean, people have done things closer to home. So it just really is hit and miss, because some businesses have really struggled and others have probably had their best year ever. Some businesses, because people are looking for things, you know, within the state where they can come for a weekend and do something. So some have done well. This weekend in particular will be a big test for our community, because the
Ironman.
Lucas, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, the Ironman Raceway, Lucas Oil Pro Motocross is in town, and they'll be having a televised event here this weekend. So the Pro Motocross is here. They have reduced their capacity about a fourth of what it normally is. So they've gone from over 30,000 spectators allowed to, you know, in the 6,000-7,000 range. So that will be a lot different. But that's a test for our community as well. When you have that many visitors coming in, and we have the teams here from all over the world participating in that. So we'll have to see what the impact of that is or isn't. But, you know, the organizers and everybody, they've submitted plans and they've been approved, and they're taking every step imaginable to limit that impact.
I know last month you made the point that it can be kind of a self-contained event, that people camp, but also, as you just said, thousands and thousands of people come to it. And you also said, so there's a possible impact from COVID, but you also said, you know, there will be an economic impact. We just might not know what that might be yet.
Yeah.
I mean, how much are people flowing into town from this event? What's the back and forth like?
Yeah, it is a back and forth. And, you know, a few years ago when we constructed Purple Heart Parkway, I think it increased that interaction even more. So you will see, you know, these teams in town. You will see people visiting for the event in town. They're going to go shop. They're going to, even if they're camping, they're going to go buy groceries and things like that sometimes. So there is an impact. We just know that the impact you know, financially will be a lot smaller this year. You're talking about a fraction of the size of the number of spectators allowed. So it will be down considerably.
Do you have any concerns about, for example, someone coming from a state that might not adhere to mask mandates, just a lot of different people coming together in one space and kind of having to coexist for the weekend, for the day? What does that look like?
Well, you know, we know statistically, you know, if you look at the numbers, there will be people in attendance. If you have that many thousands of people there, there will be positives in attendance. I mean, that's statistically going to happen. You're just trying to limit, you know, the potential for that to spread within that event. You know, are we concerned about people coming from elsewhere and coming here? I guess that's always something you have to think about, but that happens every day. You know, I mean, we have an interstate highway, we have daily passenger rail, we have all those things going on. So you know, we're not an island. We have people coming and going every day. So you just have to try to limit the spread and be universally smart in how you approach it.
So last month when we spoke, the state moratorium on utility disconnections was about 2 weeks out. So we've passed that now. It has been lifted. Can you give us an update on where Crawfordsville is at in this process? I know we've
sure.
talked about this throughout the summer, and you'd expressed concerns about people reaching out or not reaching out to create payment plans and things of that nature.
Yeah. Well, for me, the first step was really to understand what that looked like in Crawfordsville. How many people, how many utility customers were impacted and how many were not? And surprisingly, what we found out is that, you know, we took and looked at how many people were in this situation, you know, in the situation being at risk of being disconnected. It was less than 0.5%.
Okay.
So it was a very, very small number in our community. And I can't really give an explanation, you know, because I've seen other communities with much higher numbers. So less than 0.5%. So what we decided to do is, because it's so low, let's just focus on them instead of trying to bombard everybody else with all this information when it's just a small fraction, a fraction of a fraction of people affected. So we've really been targeting them and working with them. You know, our wastewater and stormwater, you can't shut wastewater off, obviously. So what you end up doing is working through the water company, and that's private in our case. They're regulated by the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission. So there's a built-in process there and a delay there. So nobody's going to get shut off in Crawfordsville right now. And we're working with those who are in that situation, that less than 0.5%, to get them caught up. And we hope they get caught up, you know, because it would probably be this fall or winter, you know, before anything, we got to the point of doing shutoffs. But the number here was very small.
Okay. In June, we basically devoted your entire show to discussing a series of measures you said you wanted to take in Crawfordsville to address police reform and what you called the climate of equality in the city. You know, there was a police shooting of a Black man, Jacob Blake, in Kenosha, Wisconsin this past weekend. Lots of conversations still happening around this topic. So looking back at that discussion and what you laid out as your plan, can you give us first an update on the formation of the Mayor's Special Commission on Racial Equality?
Well, it's moving forward. That group has already met a couple of times. It has been formed, and the membership is a little bit fluid. I mean, I expect there will be some coming and going within that group, but we have created a very dynamic group that represents a total cross-section of our community. And I'll tell you, I've been impressed because you know, a lot of times you put these groups together and they'll come for a meeting and then nobody really wants to roll up their sleeves and get to work and do things. This group has been the total opposite. They are after it. So, they have self-divided into two subgroups. One group is looking at public education, assessment, what can we do to, you know, improve the environment, those kinds of things. The other group is looking strictly at policy, police policy. So the use of force policy, how can someone, if they have a concern about an officer, how can they express that, those kinds of things. So those two independent groups are working, and then they're going to be coming back together at their next meeting to start making sure their things line up. So, you know, as was said at the kickoff meeting, you know, one of the members said, look, you know, if you look around this room, this is the all-star team. We're all here for a reason. we all love Crawfordsville and we want to make a better place, and we need to make sure that we get to work and do that. So it is a very good group and work is underway.
So I know that they were going to be reviewing the police department's use of force policies, which you were just saying, but then the city was also going to be reviewing the police department's use of force policies. Has that happened?
So they are, I think, pretty much through their review. I know they commented a couple of potential adjustments they wanted to see. The city is still in that process and should be done pretty soon as well. So, you know, there may be some adjustments to the policy, but I think what they've discovered is that overall they're pretty happy with what we have in place. We had already been very proactive in that area and had done the things that we should be doing. So, you know, the public will hear some things about that pretty soon, and you'll really start to hear stuff about the public outreach side. The challenging part is that, you know, we're trying to bring together the police department and the community as a whole. At the same time, we're dealing with a pandemic. So, you know, we have all these ideas for doing that, but then we also have to deal with the reality of social distancing and not having large events and stuff like that. So it's a little challenging, but it's well underway.
You also talked about all officers and public safety personnel completing bias awareness training. Has there been any progress in identifying what program would be used for that?
Sure. So the police officers have already completed an online component of that. And I think from what I'm hearing, they found that very interesting and very useful and very helpful. There will be more to follow, more of a classroom type setting. And again, we're up against the pandemic because hardly anyone's doing, you know, live teaching right now. And we have to make sure we find a curriculum that is accredited, that they can get continuing education for and everything else. So they're working on that. I expect that that'll probably be delayed a little bit because of the pandemic, but it'll certainly happen within the next, you know, 6 months or so.
How have the conversations you've been having with people changed around this topic over the summer? A lot has happened over the past several months. We talked about what you were hearing from people. I remember you talking about hearing silence from some people, and that also spoke to you. You know, what has evolved over the summer on this topic for you?
I think, at least in our community, the level of understanding has increased dramatically. That's what I'm noticing. So, you know, everybody was really on edge, and they were on edge based on what they were seeing and hearing pretty much from other communities. And the thought was, well, if it's happening elsewhere, it has to be happening here. And I think what each view here, if you will, if you want to split it into different views, everybody has discovered that, okay, you know, we need to look at Crawfordsville and we need to understand what's happening here. And that's what's happened. People are really communicating and understanding.
That is our time for today. Mayor Barton, thanks so much for being with
us. Thank you.
You can find this program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, West Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us your questions to ask@WBAA.org. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of the day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.